Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome you to this meeting this afternoon. I'm Andrea Helms, president of the Fairbanks Faculty Association, and it's our pleasure to have you here and to have the president here to address some remarks. The format of the meeting will be as follows. The president will make a few remarks beginning the meeting, and then after he has spoken for a while, he will take questions from the floor. I'd like to introduce to you President Jay Barton.
This is a much more formal occasion than I had thought. Andrew said, why don't we get together and chat about a few items of common concern? And this looks formal. This reminds me of the time that I was here on our interview trip, not knowing next to nothing about the University of Alaska and being introduced to many of you for the first time here in this room. A lot has happened since then. I know a great deal about Alaska now, about some areas of it, probably more than I really want to know. But it's been a fascinating year and a half, and one that I wouldn't trade for anything under the sun. I think my basic message to you today is the usual complex, ambivalent kind of thing that faculty and presidents are fond of presenting. The health of the university, I think, is excellent. We do face some serious problems. And I think the ability that you have as faculty members to make distinctions between black and white and come up with something that's gray and in between, that's a little bit ambiguous, that demands conversations on both sides. This is part of what it takes to make a university a university. And in our discussions today, I hope that we can talk about the things about which there are honest differences, and certainly about which we can pool our ignorance or pool our concern at any rate. Lots of good things have happened, though, to the university. I think in the last year, a good deal of faith in the institution has been restored. There's a new sense of hope on the campuses. There's a new sense in the legislature and in our communities. Part of that is reflected, I think, in your opening fall enrollment this year, with record enrollments on almost all of our campuses, 4 or 5% or more here at Fairbanks, a little bit less than that in Juneau, a very high percentage, as much as 18% according to first reports at the University of Alaska Anchorage. The implication is that there's a great demand for our services, that people want to come to the University of Alaska and have come in record numbers. The numbers of full-time students have increased tremendously. I think you see it very clearly on this campus because you're dealing with dormitories and you know that you have filled almost all of those dorms. I guess they're still filled overflowing, aren't they? Yeah. Some neat things have happened to your campus in particular. I think the elevation to Sea Grant College status was a most noteworthy achievement that augurs very well for our hopes and expectations that we can very effectively support the fisheries industry in the state of Alaska. This is a real step forward, and one I think that the whole campus, in fact the whole university, should be very proud of. Oh, I learned this morning one little fact that indicates increasing interest and increasing sophistication, in that this last month was a record month on the computer network. Some 67,000 or more sessions took place in that last month for a record number of people interacting and programs and computer output on our network. It is, I guess you know, the longest network in the country, and it may not be the heaviest computing network, but it certainly covers more distances than any other. We've achieved some national recognition for the work that we're beginning in telecommunications, where we hope very much to be able to move ideas and words rather than move people, and support and increase accessibility of learning throughout the state of Alaska. I think that has a tremendous future, as many of you know, and one in which many people here on the Fairbanks campus will be involved, as well as throughout the entire institution. There's some interesting things have happened just in the last last few weeks. One of our people came back from Washington the other day, from Maryland, and reported that the attitude toward the University of Alaska has changed dramatically, that people are very interested in what's going on up here. Maybe it's the income tax reduction, right? Could be many things. But it's the university that they're really concerned with, all joking aside. The number of applications for positions in the university has gone up significantly, and they're good, solid people. I think the reputation that you have, that you've made here in Alaska, is truly reaching the lower 48. The message is certainly getting across. One thing that's happening is that many, many people throughout the country are recognizing the unusual nature of higher education in Alaska. Whereas in most parts of the country, the numbers of graduating high school seniors is decreasing, here in Alaska, we have some almost 13% more students in the 15 to 24 year age group than throughout the rest of the nation, than the average in the rest of the nation. And we expect in the next 15 years an additional 15% differential. So instead of having a decrease in the numbers of students that are at least eligible to enter college at the normal 18-year-old age or traditional 18-year-old age, Alaska has an increase in that. And in a small population, predictions are exceedingly difficult, but the likelihood that Alaska will have an increasing population and increasing numbers of students interested in higher education, of people interested in higher education, I think is a very good bet. And that's unlike most of the states in the lower 48. One of the things that we don't do well on, though, is in the percent of those 18-year-olds that actually graduate from high school. We're about 10% below the national norms in that particular factor. And I think the university should share part of the challenge of decreasing that tremendous dropout rate, or that significant dropout rate. And I think some of the activities that your Department of Education are doing that will help in that direction. The other nice thing, I think, that happened to the legislature, it happened to the university, was the attitude of the legislature that very generously approved of university programs, thought up a few new ones, and ended up giving us a great deal of money this year, both for salaries and for program activities. That, too, is contrary to trends in the lower 48, and one I think that we should be very pleased with here. Now, the attitude in the legislature is no accident. I think it's due in very large measure to the kind of support that you've given the university, the representations that you've made to our legislature, and the kinds of work that you've done in your own classrooms to improve the climate and the atmosphere of higher education here in the state. The result, of course, was that we really have begun to forge some very strong ties with citizens in the state and with the legislature in particular. The planning program that we've put together, that Bill Phillips installed here in the campus and throughout the state, I think has real promise to help keep priorities straight as we put our plans together for 1982 and for 1983. We have a chance. See, I went outside and I picked up some sinus problem again. I've got to get back to this dry interior climate and get rid of that. But we are putting together a blueprint for building a truly great university. And I think the theme of this year's budget message to the legislature should be precisely that, that it's a blueprint for a great university in a great land, a university that is worthy of Alaska and one that can serve Alaska very well. Now, to make that planning process work, I think we need much more consciousness that it is a process and not some volume that defines precisely what's going to be this year and next year and the year after. What strategic planning really is a way of informed decision making. And the only way it works in a university is if each of you in your departments and colleges take part in that planning operation, so that the decisions that your chairpersons and your deans and the chancellor make are informed decisions, informed with your technical knowledge and technical competence, with your hopes and aspirations. Now, they're tested against the kinds of things that Dean Phillips and Vice President Hoffman have been working with in defining the goals and objectives of our units and testing them by a process of iteration, so that the goals and aspirations that you have in your department are tested against the planning constraints, the nature of the future that does limit what we can do, so that eventually your goals and objectives are reasonably realistic goals and objectives, and then our planning decisions that we make in the light of those begin to make very good sense. The whole planning system to work has to be academically oriented, and I believe it is. Our point is to build an educational institution, not to build a budget, not to spend money, but to serve Alaska. And the only way we're going to do that is to develop budgets that address the relationships between objectives and assumptions with Regents policy at the university level. All of the internal reallocations that you made this year, the continuation levels, the increments, all of the paraphernalia of budget making this year did produce a plan for 1982 that we'll take to the legislature that does, more than last year, reflect the hopes and aspirations of the whole university. It's only a first approximation, but it's a good beginning. I hope that you continue your interest in that planning process. It has a real potential for success. I think that one of the key priorities or guidances that the board and I are pushing for in the university is to again bring the university to the service of the state in building the strongest possible economy that we can. And in addition to that, the richest possible culture, not just in fisheries or in forestry or in agriculture or in mining or in petroleum or in engineering, but also in philosophy and in music, in art and in literature, in science, a whole host of areas. We need to build an institution that really can meet the needs of the people of Alaska. Not our needs, but the needs of the citizens that we serve. Almost by coincidence, I clipped an article off the back of the Chronicle of Higher Education the other day that talked about, October 20th, that talked about the big shift in student majors, the interest that our young people have today in schools of business, in engineering, in strong career-oriented programs that give them a step forward in getting a job. And I think that you can see from the enrollments this year that is very true of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. About the same time, there was an editorial in the Anchorage paper about education needing broad resources, an editorial that reported on the Rockefeller Foundation study on the humanities, which cited the alarming evidence of lowered levels of academic achievement among high school graduates and of school policies that condone low standards and of the increasing turning away of our students from the humanities and the values that they seek to give us. I think we have to learn somehow to do both, because at some point universities are going to have to learn to teach human values, and I'll stay away from the word humanistic, but human values, so that our students, when they practice engineering or practice business management, are practicing with some insight into the nature of man and his function. I'm pleased to learn that our own music departments and art departments are crowded with students, even though engineering may be pushing ahead on increases in enrollment. Certainly, the state of Alaska has every right to call upon us to supply the kinds of people and the resources to make Alaska tick. And we contribute to that primarily by the things you and I do best. We think and we teach. And isn't that the essence of what it means to be a professor? You know, you don't have to be in a laboratory. You don't have to be doing things with machinery or equipment. But you do have to be thinking. And then you teach the fruits of that thought. In that sense, our university, spread as it is across the entire state of Alaska, offers the strongest possible and largest nucleus of trained people, knowledgeable people, that the state has. This really is the intellectual resource of the state of Alaska. If we can do it properly, so that the whole land-grant mission and the land-grant concept comes to the forefront, your talents and your thinking and your teaching really will serve the state and make the state. There's no institution that's in a better position to influence its own state than the University of Alaska. And I think that's what makes, I'm sure that's what holds many of you here, and I'm certain that that's what makes it especially exciting for me. Just as helping the economy of the state of Alaska really is a people-dependent job, so the University of Alaska is people-dependent. And even though this is an age of high technology and an age where the specialized knowledge is critical, it's nevertheless true that both the economy and the educational enterprise require people of very, very high talent and high commitment and dedication. It's, I think, in the development of these talented individuals, both in furthering your goals and objectives, and especially in helping the young people that come to us, that this is where we will meet the future challenges of Alaska's economy, and this is where the university will make its major contribution. The budget that we're taking to the legislature this year is a budget of about 18.5% increase in program funds over last year. 18.5% including inflationary adjustments and program increases. Now that's about where we were last year. Although last year the inflationary increase wasn't quite as big a part of that 19% we went to the legislature with. This year inflation has been devastating. Our adjustments for inflation have been as realistic as we could make them and based on the best possible projections of what inflation will be in fiscal 82. There are a few statements that I think summarize that budget that the regents approved and that we shall take before the governor's committee in the very near future and that we shall shortly present to the legislature. First of all, the University of Alaska plan for 1982 was a very realistic step toward building a great university and a great land. 18.5% is not that outrageous. In fact, it might even be an inadequate amount to do the job, and yet it indicates that we will probably double our budget every 4 years to go on at that rate, and that's an astronomical amount of money. That's a huge amount of money. Again, with my lower 48 mentality, it's an overwhelming amount. Maybe not for Alaska and its oil wealth at the moment. The university plan, I think, is responsive to the need to train and educate citizens. And the bulk of that increase that we're asking for is indeed in educational programs here at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and across the state, in engineering, in renewable resources and science programs, in vocational education, in student services and program support, in English, in a whole series of areas, in fine arts, theater instruction, a whole series of areas that are of direct concern to you in this room and of great concern to the students that we serve. Third, the university's plan for 82 focuses on the support of economic development of our renewable and non-renewable resources through research and extension activities. Apart from the training of people to carry these missions out, we still need to carry out research, development studies, and then bring this technology and this knowledge to the citizens of the state. So that there's a significant amount of money in the budget for that outreach activity and that R&D support. The university plan is also responsive to the needs of Alaskans for increased accessibility and for equal learning opportunities. There are funds for extension facilities at Prince William Sound, shared facilities in the Aleutians, library media services, facility support, innovative program development, an instructor for general studies at Northwest Community College, some teacher training and coordination, outreach instruction, telecommunications again, a whole series of activities that will help us to bring education to people and to make the whole educational system more accessible for them. Our fifth point is that our plan for 1982 requests funds for improving coordination and management services, for equal opportunity compliance activity, for a program budget analyst, for a telephone operator dispatcher, for a fiscal analyst, a good deal of money for computer services development to bring our computer sciences and our computer network up to a reasonable operating level. Some work to help us bring order and reason to our student record system in admissions and in registration, and funds to support faculty governance. Finally, we've asked for a fairly sizable capital budget for direct appropriation, a good deal of money for the repairs and operations of our facilities, that is the repair and alteration of our facilities. Much of that would end up on the University of Alaska Fairbanks, inasmuch as this is the oldest campus and in greatest need of building maintenance. In addition, a new building, a new addition to LV, a number of other new facilities that are in the list, but the number of new buildings is small. This question of capital facilities is open to a good deal of amendment as we look at the future. Nobody yet knows what's going to happen November 5th in the election on the bond issue. I've been advised by people who know precisely what's going to happen, who tell me that there's no question that the bond issues are going to pass. And then the next day somebody comes in and says, no, everybody knows that this ought to be directly appropriated, the bond issues will fail. And if they do fail, not because of a negative feeling toward the university or toward education, but because there's a feeling we shouldn't go in debt for things that we might be able to afford out of pocket. I can't predict. I have no idea. We'll know Tuesday night or Wednesday morning how that really came out. If, however, the bond issue is defeated for whatever reason, we'll put together a totally different package of capital improvement requests that the board will look at and forward again to the governor and the legislature. And that list would include the kinds of things that are in the present bond issue, of course. A little summary that I've closed our budget highlight booklet with this year. The building of a great university, one that is worthy of Alaska, is a task that requires the efforts of all of us, students and faculty, staff and administration, citizens and legislature, the governor and the regents. It isn't easy. The attainment of excellence demands maximum effort. It requires that we rise above partisanship and regional politics in order to serve all of Alaska. Funding the UA plan will provide for people to teach and to think about the problems of Alaska. It will provide resources needed to make the university the most responsive of any state university to the needs of the people of its state. And then I ended with a quote from one of my favorite authors, Thomas Jefferson, who wrote that if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it is. The problem that I pointed out to the assembly, I think, is rather simple to analyze, but rather difficult to solve. And that is that the decision makers in the legislature quite legitimately want to help plan for higher education. They have objectives for higher education, just as you and I have. And they're legitimate objectives. I think this is a reasonable role for a state legislature. It points out to you and to me that education really is important and worth the attention of a legislator in Juneau. I'm pleased with that. If they didn't pay any attention to us, I'd be much more concerned than the fact that they're interested in our plans and interested in our activities and want to contribute. The problem, though, is that each one of those legislators wants to be reelected, for the most part, and each one of them has to do something for his or her region that will help to guarantee that reelection. So that almost inevitably, a legislature is torn by partisan politics and must do something for Fairbanks or something for Anchorage or something for Juneau or something for the Bush in order to help their reelection. And that something might not be that is most important for the entire state of Alaska or for education as a whole. Now, how can we get some statewide perspective rather than regional perspective in making those decisions? I think one way is to ask that the basic decisions on allocating resources across the system be made by people who have a statewide responsibility and a statewide constituency. In principle, that's the Board of Regents. And that doesn't mean that I am naive enough to think that no member of the Board of Regents votes because of the locus that he comes from. But I do think that every regent appointed by a governor, confirmed by a legislature, carries a statewide mandate to make decisions in the best interest of the state as a whole. That regent doesn't have to stand for re-election. That regent is responsible only to his conscience in carrying out the public trust and to the people of the state. I'd like very much to see education returned to the university, that is, education decision-making returned to the university, so that the kinds of decisions that a legislature makes are much more appropriate to a legislature, and those that the regents make are appropriate to higher education. Two things are needed to do that, to bring that about. The first is that our planning process has to be so good and perceived to be so good that it truly reflects our common best judgment about what is most important in Fiscal 82. And that plan has to be presented to the legislature so they see that we know what's most important. If a member of the legislature can have confidence in our planning and our decision making, then he or she can easily ask a constituent asking for a special favor for a particular region of the state to say, why don't you put that in the planning process? I'm sure it's going to get a reasonable treatment and a reasonable review. And in a way, we can protect, with our planning system, we can protect a legislature, a legislator, from undue pressure from special interest groups and special constituents. The second need is that the legislature in turn has to say, the plan that you present may need modification. We're not going to decide for you precisely how that plan ought to be. They should say to the regents, here is the appropriation for higher education. We like your plan. We've suggested some changes. You make the decisions. And in effect, go back to the single appropriation that the university had not so many years ago. Now, that's not too much to ask. But I don't think I'm going to get it. I'm not at all sure that the legislature is going to be that responsive. They might be, however, because the importance of the issue is so great. It isn't a matter of adding flexibility to the regents or to statewide administration. The issue really is to improve the quality of decision-making for education. Well, that's enough comments, I think. I would like very much to stand for questions and to help you on areas that you think are critical. Yes?
I'm very encouraged by your remarks about the planning process, and I'm very optimistic for the state's wealth and the legislature's attitude. At the departmental level, I don't believe that the aspirations of the faculty are being worked into that planning process yet. I'd like to ask your advice on how we, at the departmental level, the faculty to begin to let their aspirations be known about what I would call three critical issues, yeah. The three S's, space, and a services budget, and the one of the
Celery. One of the reasons that I've got on my way every chance I have to talk about planning is precisely the question, the issue that you raised. I know very well that in this first year, the process has not permeated throughout the faculty, and that it is not perceived by individual members of the faculty in your department or in most other departments as being a normal part of their planning and decision making. The way that I worked at it in my previous incarnation was to ask the Planning Council to stress its facilitative role. The Planning Council wasn't there to do the planning. The Planning Council was there to help deans and department chairpersons and faculty do the planning. And as they learned the process, they in turn met with deans and chairpersons and helped them with the process. Now, I think that's the stress that the Council is moving toward this year. And piece by piece, I think the planning cycle that we begin in its entirety this year, some 18 months in advance of FY83, that it will reflect much more clearly your participation as an individual. You will feel at least that you've had a much greater chance to influence the shape of the planning for the University of Alaska Fairbanks. It's going to take a year or two to get there, but the process doesn't close it out. It isn't a process of decision making and planning by a select group, a blue ribbon committee, or by managers only. It's a process where the professional responsibilities of faculty have to play a role and do get in. And I know it does work. By the way, the young man who helped me put this together in West Virginia, I helped him, Ray Haas, who many of you met on his visit up here, just got elected president of the American Council on Planning. I think I've got the name wrong. American Association of University Planners, I think. First-rate honor. Yes?
The improved relationship that the university has with the state legislature has come about partly because we had a very poor relationship a few years ago. Rather inept handling of the financial situation. But it seems to me that there's been some cost involved in getting that relationship. The legislature has been encouraged to take a much more active role in the university, in making decisions for the university, and you alluded to that, many of the aspects of budget increase have been things that have been handed to the university.
Right.
Well, they weren't requested by the university. Now, I don't think that this is necessarily a healthy relationship, especially if it continues this way. It seems to me that the role of both the regents and your role are prostituted a little bit in by the fact that the legislature is taking some of the responsibilities away from you. And it means that there's a much greater politicizing of the university. And you said that, you know, the people, more of Alaskans are wanting to come to the university, but on the other hand, more Alaskans want the university to come to them. And the legislature is very responsive to that. And it seems to me that this could be then lead to further fracturing of the integrity of the university. How do you feel about that?
I worry about it too, especially your last phrase, the further fractioning or further fracturing of the university. A very real threat, and one of the most serious problems I think we face. Let me speak to your main theme, though. I think it's fair to say that this legislature, although it's smaller and more enthusiastic, is not that different than many lower 48 legislatures. And they're always interested in big budgets in university, in the state government, very much interested. In this case, they got interested to the point of almost managing the university some years ago with a multiplicity of line items and a multiplicity of mandates and legislative intents, primarily because of the problems the university had or that they perceived the university to have. I think they're backing away from that. And the perception I have in the legislature is that they're very pleased that you have gotten your house in order, that the legislature is in much better shape, that the university is in much better shape, Well, I mean it both ways, but they're very comfortable with the fact that more and more they can turn their back on the university. Now, I don't want them ever literally to turn their back, because I want them interested. I want them intrigued with what education can do. I think we've made real progress. They've decreased the number of line appropriations this year. We basically have one appropriation for each of the university units this year. And within that, there's tremendous flexibility, so that your chancellor has a lump of money this year. The regents didn't get it, but the chancellor did. And with that lump, there are lots of constraints from past history, but with that lump, theoretically, he has all the flexibility that he needs. We are making progress, but I worry about your concern equally with you. I'd like to caution you on one thing, though, that we shouldn't feel our egos affronted. I would hate to have the discussion reach the point that we're mad at the legislature because they're impeding our authority. I'd much rather see us look at a problem and agree on a common solution, or if they push very hard for this solution, at least negotiate with it, rather than end up in some confrontation that says, on the one part, the university says, you can't do it, and the legislature says, we can too. And from then on, it's really a shouting match, and I would rather not have it proceed that far. Yes, sir. Right here.
For some time, some of us have been in doubt or very much up in the air about the position of the Vice President for Academic Affairs and Institutional Planning. Is that the right designation for the position that's now open? Mm-hmm. And we worked with Dr. Trombley for the time that he was here. I sometimes felt he was somewhat frustrated in his position. I never could understand what he was supposed to be doing. More recently, I think some of us have been puzzled even closer to home about what the role of the chancellor is. And so if I could ask you to comment on the role of these two individuals, these two positions, which are not open for replacement, I would appreciate it.
The Vice President for Academic Affairs position, as it was structured when I arrived, and still is, that is, I haven't significantly changed the job description or the responsibilities, was primarily designed to develop and to monitor the academic programs of the entire university. Given the proviso and the policy that the Board of Regents approves academic programs, there was a clear need for an individual actively to seek to develop those programs and then to set up some sort of program review or quality control mechanism with them. There was also, at that time, and still is, a great need for institutional planning, and Foster, in making that initial appointment, attached the planning function to that office, or the monitoring or supervision of the planning function to that office, too. Now, that's a good place for it, because a planning program, a planning process, really should be academically driven. And I'd rather see an academician, somebody whose primary responsibility was in academic programs and program development, monitoring and overseeing and encouraging the entire planning process. But we hope to replace it with a person of similar stature and motivations and directions. I think you spoke to me earlier about a university search, or an Alaskan search, rather than a statewide search, a lower 48.
I asked if it were necessary to focus so strongly on a nationwide search, yes.
The reply I gave you then, I might give once more, that I want very much to have somebody there that the faculties of the state are comfortable with. And I would propose a more extensive search, or I proposed a more extensive search, primarily to convince you that I'm quite serious, that I want to find somebody who can truly be an academic leader in that role. It's a difficult role. and one that that every state system has great difficulty in filling. Most academic vice presidents are basically the internal president of a campus, and the deans generally report to the president through the academic vice president, and he has a line authority and a line role. And even though all of us know that there's not much authority, there's a lot of responsibility, but not much authority, it still is a much more rewarding and reinforcing position than a staff role. But a vice president for academic affairs in a university system is essentially a staff position. Now, I've modified it somewhat in seeking to develop a type of team presidency so that the two vice presidents and I share the responsibilities of the presidency as a team would. There, as I think I mentioned to some of you earlier, in a team there clearly is a leader. It isn't a committee system, and it has a chance to work. Now, I think if I can offer a good, interested academician that kind of responsibility, as well as the role in developing the university, helping to develop the University of Alaska, that we can get a good person. The question you ask about the role of chancellors is one that we've been discussing with chancellors and with the board since I arrived, and I gather from looking at past history since 1971 or thereabouts. The issue was beginning to be discussed in terms of functions rather than in terms of concepts, and I think may be resolved by dealing with specifics of how do we handle a statewide program in fisheries, how do we handle a statewide computer network, although that we've done by not dropping down into an institution, yet it serves each of the institutions. Piece by piece, I think that's becoming clearer. That too is a question that most chancellors and presidents are asking across the nation. There's a very narrow road between having a system that responds as a system on the one hand and having a chancellor with some independence and sense of responsibility for his own campus on the other. And it's very easy to make chancellors middle management if it isn't very carefully done. And if that's done, then the kinds of chancellors we have are not the kinds that our institutions really deserve. I think all I can assure you is that I'm acutely sensitive to this, and so is the board, and we're working at it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other good questions? There's one, Gary.
Do you think the presence of the statewide administration, particularly yourself, on the campus here is somewhat intimidating and confining to the chancellor and the basic administration of the campus?
I think that the choice of words that you use could help me to give an unequivocal no. but if we can talk about the problem in general, I can respond, I think, a little more substantively. There are problems in the University of Missouri and in the University of Wisconsin, the two that I've looked at most closely, in having the system presidency and the campus chancellorship on the same campus, or have on one of the campuses. And I don't think it's intimidating so much as creating some sort kinds of tensions. In this case, it isn't confining. There's such a friction over space, I think it works both ways about who's going to go where. So confining wouldn't be the right word. I don't think it's improved by moving the president's office off the campus. In both Wisconsin and Missouri, finally a separate headquarters was built. And the interesting thing here is that the first person to propose that there be a new statewide administration building was Chancellor Cutler, who felt that he had the most to gain in terms of release space and distinctions. See, it's very easy for people in town and for people from outside to assume that the University of Alaska Fairbanks is a campus that the president runs, and that's where the real problem lies. And on that, Howard and I have simply tried very hard to keep the the complainers about the physical plant out of my office and in his, or the complainers about parking tickets out of my office and into his. And we've been generally successful in that. There is the board did approve a request for a statewide administration building in the request budget for this year. And that might help to make the distinction and to make the difference a little clearer. I think John Toll at the University of Maryland also built a new building, and this time about 3 miles away from the Elkins, from the College Park campus. Any other questions? I can't see. Yes.
Have you given any recent interest or attention to reinstituting the office of a vice president for research statewide?
I've been asked by the legislature to review, especially by Brian, to review the way in which research is managed in the university system. And I've talked with all of the chancellors and with Chancellor Mather about aspects of this and with our vice presidents and about ways in which we might come to some good resolution. I don't think the answer is to move it back to statewide. If we're going to really end up with faculties, we're going to have faculties that are parts of institutions, not just research institutes. I'll share with you briefly where we are at the moment. What we're talking about is instituting a series of university forums to discuss some of the critical problems in university research. Things like changes in patterns of federal funding. The one that's hot on everybody's agenda right now is Circular A21 and the new rules on time reporting for faculty researchers. Some discussions on how do we handle statewide programs like fisheries that exist on many campuses, but that would be better if they were coordinated to some extent. Involve in those forums university faculties from all of our campuses so that we can get the best judgment on these critical issues and stimulate thought about what are the kinds of problems that university research is facing. With the $30,000, we have funds to bring people in. We're also going to begin by asking some good advice. John Slaughter, we hope, is coming up at the end of the month to meet with all of us. And in the process, we may learn a little bit about where NSF wants to go in the coming years. And we may be able to help him learn what research is like in Alaska as well as at Washington State University. He's a very perceptive university person who understands the problems universities have in carrying out research. So I think we have a chance to learn from him as well as to influence him. Do you have any ideas in this regard?
No, it just seemed to me that with the research in general being still, I think, a statewide effort, that it strikes me that perhaps an individual in charge of the statewide might be appropriate.
I think the only reason that you see it as a statewide effort is because of that separate appropriation line for organized research. It really is part of Howard Cutler's responsibilities, and to a greater or lesser degree has been his concern in attempting to integrate over the years fully into the university. That's going to be one of the problems we need to talk about in a good forum too.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
It seems to me that your goal of removing the university from both politics and regionalization is a noble one, and yet I wonder if in 1980, when the legislature is going to be reapportioned, and from operations it seems as though Anchorage is going to get the major lion's share of the representatives, at the same time, Anchorage, a growing area, wants more and more from the university, while Fairbanks doesn't want to surrender anything. It makes it very difficult to separate the university out, both from regionalization and from politics. I'm wondering, how did we go about doing that?
I think you've answered the question, Dean. If this does happen the way you propose, it's because of regionalization. And the only way to prevent it is to look for some way in which the legislature doesn't have to vote for Anchorage or vote for Fairbanks, because in reapportionment, Fairbanks presumably would come out on the short end. Rather than fight it out on regional battles, then, on a level that perhaps Fairbanks couldn't in which Fairbanks couldn't compete, why not fight it out on a level where you're asking for statewide decision making from a statewide responsible board? That's the point. I think that's all the more reason why we have to push this year before the legislature is even more polarized. I hope. Yes, sir. John?
If you see a different role for the Fairbanks camper in the future, I think most of us have a feeling that our numbers have pretty good jobs. This campus in the right direction over the last 4 or 5 years, and I'm wondering if you're asking him to step down or up. Would you see that the role of this campus changing or what?
I think that the answer is no, John. I think the strengths that you and I have talked about over the last year of an international reputation in some of our sciences and national reputations in others of our departments and a fantastic contribution to the state of Alaska in our humanities and social sciences, that remains. And it is, as you recall, the phrase in our mission book that we debated was the phrase flagship campus. In the present state of Alaska, that is, as Alaska is presently structured, this is the flagship campus of the state. The Board of Regents is, at this moment, interested in looking hard at the scope and role of the campuses. So I'll leave the door open for them to do some rethinking, but I don't think they're rethinking in terms of dramatically changing the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I do see them thinking hard about the extent to which we've proliferated independent community colleges. I do think that they're going to look hard at the kinds of missions they've assigned to university campuses in general. And it may well be that we're going to end up with a clearer picture of what the three university campuses and the 11 or 12 community colleges really are about. But I don't think it's going to be to the detriment of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Any other questions today? Yes, sir. Klaus?
I share Dave Klein's concern about the fashionalization of the university, and perhaps this will be taken care of because the bill to action to separate the community colleges will come up in every legislature. And I know it's coming up again, and hearings will be held. But it seems to me that over the years, the university, willy-nilly by, I suppose, acceding to legislative wishes, has built a system which is absolutely ludicrous for a population of 110,000 people. If we had to depend on the taxpayers, we certainly couldn't afford the structure that we've built now. And I'm just looking down the pipe to the time when the oil revenues will run out. How are we going to support that overarching system?
Yeah.
Or is it top heavy, or it's too heavy right now? Now trying to be everything for everybody. And I just wonder if the Board of Regents has ever taken a look at this whole university concept. How much is the university supposed to do in the state? Seems to me they're trying to do everything, to be everything for everybody.
Well, I think you know the answer. The Board of Regents has worried considerably about this, and there were periods where the legislature was one step ahead, if I read history properly, in pushing them hard to extend their resources. But there also was a period where the university didn't extend its resources, and it took the legislature to push it, again, if I read history properly. That's why I really believe there's a legitimate and a necessary role for the legislature in planning higher education in the state of Alaska and in any state, just as there is for the university. Because we don't really have a right, an intrinsic right to support, unless we really do serve. Now, I don't share your concern that it's necessarily overgrown. I do share your concern that it's expensive. But I think that unless there are efforts made to bring education to people in Alaska, that the alternative is ignorance. And as somebody said the other day, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. That's even more expensive. We can't do that. Now, maybe we can do a better way of bringing education to this state where transportation and communication is so difficult. And that's one reason I'm very much interested in telecommunications. And you can't do it without people. You have to have people out there, but you don't have to have so many specialists out there. And you can rotate people, and you don't have to have them present for every minute of every 50-minute hour.